Welcome to New Pod. Presented by Knotfest.com. Primer 55 bassist Joshua Toomey and War Machine merch mastermind Ro Coley bring you a weekly dose of all things new. Album deep dives, news, interviews. This is New Pod.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of New Pod right here on Knotfest.com. As always, I'm Joshua Toomey. That is Ro Coley. And on the episode this week, we have the one and only Burton C. Bell, formerly of Fear Factory and many other bands. A new track, Anti-Droid, out now. And Ro, I think it's fucking amazing.
I love it. I mean, to me, it's such a return to form for him.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, it's a great interview and a lot of fun.
You know, it's funny when that track kind of popped up out of the blue. It really just hit, you know, hit Spotify and everything kind of on the same day with, you know, we it's not like we had a advanced copy or anything like that.
Right.
So I listened to it on the way to work and listened to it a few times. And I was just like, you know, it's one of those things where when I'm like, I'll take Seven Dust, you know, because all those guys kind of do solo albums. And you really hear what part of Seven Dust those guys brought to the table.
Right.
And I really feel like this shows you kind of the vein that Burton brought to Fear Factory, kind of the more electronic and industrial sounds that he kind of brought to the band.
Right. And especially, I mean, you know, just some of the old influences of his that we talked about, you know, that people, you know, especially when it comes to nu metal and whatnot, you know, people are, you know, they hear Fear Factory and they'll think like Digimortal and, you know, mm-hmm. you know, their collaboration with Cypress Hill and things of that nature. But it's like people need to remember that, you know, Fear Factory started from someplace also. And it was yeah. born of bands, you know, industrial bands like Ministry. But then you had like that, like crust punk of like Neurosis and you know early industrial like the Swans and you know just and then going into like Helmet, you know, like it's like so much of it is what made them who yeah. they are. And I think people really need to remember that it's not just like they didn't just hop on the scene with Digimortal. It's like they had a lot going on before that, but without them so much of nu metal would not even have happened.
They were in that forefathers camp. I mean, 95 is demanufactured for me. A buddy of mine, like I talk about it in the interview, a buddy of mine gave it to me in probably 95. So I'm like, you know, peak getting into Korn, Deftones, and here comes Fear Factory.
Right.
And they were doing something back then that I think a lot of bands are doing now, but they have a little bit more advantage because of the technology of recording. Like back then, you know, Fear Factory is recording to tape and it's, you know, it's not as much triggers and things like that. Now you can, you know, line everything up on a grid and you can right. make sure everything's precise and tight, but Fear Factory is always precise and tight back in the day on, you know, recording to tape. Some of that early stuff, man, just blew my mind, you know, like Raymond's fucking kick drums and everything else, right. man. It was an insane band.
Right. I mean, and not only that, but it's like, you know, you growing up in the South, right? Like, where'd you grow up again? Was it Kentucky or
Nashville?
Excuse me. You know, you growing up there, me growing up in New Jersey, it's like we had sort of our own scenes, and those scenes back then didn't really merge, you know, like yeah. there was never really a melding of the scenes. You know, sometimes a headliner band would take some local opener and just kind of do a bunch of shows in the region, and that yeah. was it. So it's like while you were in Nashville, I'm in Jersey. You know, there's this thing going on in Los Angeles that, you know, prior to me, you know, coming out here and everything like that, like LA was just like this magical fairy tale land, you know, like it didn't right. really exist.
Yeah.
You know? So it was kind of like, you know, you think about back then, it's like, all right, like the guys in Korn, you know, before they were Korn, are going to see Fear Factory play, you yeah. know, it's like, so it's like that whole scene, like in LA was just so, it was so prevalent here, you know, in Los Angeles, but like the rest of us, we just didn't have any idea of it. So it's like, you know, back then it's like, yeah, Ross Robinson was just hanging out at the Whiskey, you know, right. Dino's just hanging out at the Rainbow, you know, like all these people are doing all this stuff, but nobody realizes that they're contributing to something that ends up turning into this you know, pop culture defining genre that it's become, you know. And I think that talking to Bert, like you, like even for me, you know, having my history with them, you know, it's like thinking about it now, it's like, wow, yeah, like you really realize first band that Ross Robinson produced. It's the yeah. first, you know, it's like it's every so much of it is carbon atoms that just build life, you know? And it's like, it's such a huge part of that. Sorry, I'm getting very, very scientifically introspective. You know, what is life? You know,
what but is life?
But that's kind of it. It's like, it really is. It's all part of those super building blocks of what happened, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's the exciting part about it, is to really dive into it and really see that
fear factor. Even in the interview, I kind of brought it up and it kind of all hit me all at once, even saying it. There's so much going on right now. The term nu metal, the Korn riff that, you know, they may have supposedly taken from early Fear Factory, Ross Robinson kind of getting his feet wet recording Fear Factory. There's so much going on right now that wouldn't be happening if it wasn't for Fear Factory at the time.
Right. That's exactly it. And without them being at that forefront of all of it, everybody, you know, we were Cold Chambers and, you know, the Static X's and all the bands that we attribute, you know, consider part of this new metal genre. It's like, yeah, like none of that would have been possible without Burton and Fear Factory. I think they're really one of the most integral parts of the new metal lifeline and tapestry that can't be understated.
I want to dive into a couple of news stories before we dive into our interview with Burton. Real quick, we don't even have to comment on this. I just want to throw this on the podcast. Alex Varkatsis from Atreyu just put out his Dead Icarus EP, covered Pantera's Yesterday Don't Mean Shit, and it's fucking phenomenal.
Awesome. I will check that out. That sounds rad.
I always loved Atreyu back then. I loved his vocals in Atreyu. And as for a cover, a Pantera cover, sounds great. And whoever's playing guitar on it, they fucking nailed the solo.
Nice.
That's a couple of things you need for a good Pantera cover. Is you need, you know, obviously the sound right, the good vocals, and then I always have to wait for the solo, and because sometimes they'll throw in their own solo that just like comes out of nowhere,
right?
Doesn't really like fit. I'm like, nah, but he played the solo almost note for note, but also added a few things. So I'll give it to him. Pretty damn awesome.
Nice. Well worth checking out.
So yeah. And then, I did want to hit on, Slipknot kind of teasing their new drummer. And there's been kind of some drummer musical chairs going on right now. And this comes with no inside information. Just because this is a Knotfest podcast does not mean that we know anything going on in the Slipknot camp. Let's just make sure that's out there
right
away.
Yeah, we have no insider knowledge. That's for sure.
But it was kind of strange that Eloy Casagrande from Sepultura leaves Sepultura right before their latest tour to quote unquote join another project.
Right.
Eloy is probably top three drummers out right now, if not the best drummer out there.
Sick fucking drummer too. That guy is. I mean, he is a beast. He is a beast behind the kit.
That's yeah,
when he was in Sepultura after he took over after Igor. I mean, you know, you always go, oh, Igor and Max and Sepultura, but like when he came in, it was, he's definitely got something going on. He's definitely a force to be reckoned with. So if he is in Slipknot,
yeah,
they've definitely gotten somebody who's fucking like is no joke.
If he's the drummer of Slipknot, this is the most excited for Slipknot I've been in a long time. Because I interviewed Andreas a few years ago and we talked about Eloy. And it's actually out there on Knotfest YouTube if you want to check it out. But I was like, Eloy was almost like biogenetically engineered to be Sepultura's drummer.
Right.
Like he's just got that groove about him. And Andreas told me that actually they met him because he was going to school with Igor's kids. Like that's how they met him. Like that's they were funny. In the same school and Eloy was already... he was already like popping up on TV. I guess he was a young phenom and he was like popping up on local talk shows and stuff. And then he goes to join Sepultura. And I don't really watch a lot of drum cam videos of many people, but Eloy is one of those dudes that like, I will watch that, you know, and he's fucking amazing. Throughout the whole pandemic and whatnot, he was putting out like covers videos. There's a few covers of him doing Slipknot tracks out there already from back in the day. Fucking phenomenal. So if this is what we're getting, you know, over the next few years or whatever, like I'm all for it.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, like, me and my wife were talking about, you know, we were talking about going to Hawaii during her spring break. Excuse me, going to Japan, rather, for her spring break. And we're both just like, Sick New World is right in the middle of that. So we're actually like, okay, we have to figure out how we're going to do this. Cause like, I was like, are we really giving up our honeymoon to see Slipknot? And she's like, we might be. And I was like, you don't have to tell me twice. Like, let's do it. So we're actually like reconfiguring our honeymoon plans just to fit in Slipknot and Sick New World, you know, because I really want to see, the new masks. I want to see who the new drummer is. And I just want to see them fucking destroy that fucking festival. I mean, if it is Eloy, then that's a hell of an addition to that band, that is for sure. You know,
so with Eloy leaving Sepultura, so that means Suicidal's former drummer, 21-year-old, what is his full name, Grayson Nekrutman, goes to Sepultura. I didn't realize he was only 21. I mean, I knew he was young. I didn't realize he was that young. Yeah, so far, what I've seen, the videos, that looks like it's going pretty well. And then, so Suicidal Tendencies opens up.
Right.
Suicidal. So, and they've posted their first show with Jay playing.
In Japan, I think, right?
I didn't see exactly where but it's just, it's just one of those deals where it's like a musical. So if it does end up being Eloy, I think it's going to be pretty hilarious that it was kind of just this rotation. Like, everybody get up and move part. It's like speed dating or something.
Yeah,
like
you said it before. It's like drummer musical chairs, you know.
Right.
Everyone moving over one step.
I can't say enough about how incredible Eloy is. And once again, you know, if all the rumors are true, which, you know, there's the Broken Stick, and I've absolutely loved the internet sleuths out there that are like, the Broken Stick is the type of sticks that he plays. And I think there's another photo of like a corner of a drum head or something. And have already like lined that up, you know, and like the Slipknot fans are amazing when it comes to trying to figure out like what's going on with the band, like how they figured out V-Man was V-Man, from the hand tattoos. Yep.
I love stuff like that when people are like, okay, if we just figure this out. And like, I mean, but in a weird way, it's like that also sort of takes away some of the magic of the reveal in a weird way. But at the same time, in this day and age, you can't expect everything to be a secret. So, you know, but I mean, hey, you know, Suicidal's got Jay, who's a great drummer, and Sepultura's got previous dude from, I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Grayson Nekrutman.
That's it. You know, it's like everything kind of, I don't know, sort of just kind of works out in a weird way in the end. So,
yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and actually, we got Infectious Grooves out here doing two nights, which I'm super excited about. It's one of my favorite. The first Infectious Groove record is like one of my favorite records ever. So seeing Jay do those, because Stephen Perkins from Jane's Addiction was the drummer from Infectious Grooves. So to see him step into that role as well, because Perkins is one of my favorite drummers as well. So it's like just to see him come into that, all of it to me is very exciting right now.
And so obviously looking forward to everything coming up. And if it's Eloy, you know, thumbs up for me. How about that?
Ditto that.
And one more thing before we get into our interview with Burton C. Bell, which is kind of on par for everything. Dino Cazares has posted a thing on Facebook and Twitter and whatnot, which I think is funny that they're throwing it just on Facebook, like of all things, like looking for a new bass player or a temporary fill in for when Tony Campos is ever on tour with Static X. Let's see here. Let's go through the must haves.
The list is funny.
So number one, you must play with a pick, no fingers, sounds about right for Fear Factory. Some touring experience. That one's, you know, it helps, but I mean, I think that, the vocalist didn't have any touring experience before he jumped up with Fear Factory. So
that's true. That's a good point, but it definitely does help though, because it's like, I think that a lot of times people, when a tour comes to town, people are like, oh wow, cool. Touring is so cool. Da, da, da. You know, but like everybody else goes back to their regular day to day, whatever. Right. And then that band goes to the next show and the next show and the next show. And I think that people have a very romanticized view of the glamour of touring and the, you know, they see like whatever, Home Sweet Home by Motley Crue or whatever it is, you know, it's it looks like, tour buses and chicks and all, you know, it's like, you know, but then when you get on tour and you're like, wait a minute, what? Like, this isn't what I thought it was, you know, like, so some touring experience is probably not the worst thing in the world.
Three and four, kind of similar. Up-to-date passport, no criminal record.
Sure.
Five, no hard drugs. Number six is the best.
Number six is the best one.
Not an alcoholic, but must be able to walk a straight line after a bottle of tequila. In parentheses, because Tony can do it.
Because Tony can do it. If you can't do that, then sorry.
Yeah. Seven, plays well with others. That's always a preferably. Must. Five-string bass. You know, yeah. You need that for the band. In-ear monitors required for a click track. So I guess you must have to provide in-ear monitors. USA residents preferred. And then if you want this, you need to post a video performing fuel-injected suicide machine. And number 12, ego is not your amigo.
When I read that, I was like, that's funny.
When
it's true, though. I mean, it's like, you know, again, just like the whole touring experience thing, it's like if you don't have touring experience, then a lot of those other ones are kind of part of it. Having an ego, playing well with others, no hard drugs, all these kinds of things really play into that aspect of it. So it's like the whole ego thing, touring, it's like those are all part of the whole puzzle of it all. So I think it's all pretty important stuff, but curious to see who they're going to get. What do you think, Josh? You going for it?
I've thought about it. I think I might throw a video up. You never know. But it's funny how many times I was tagged in this or sent it, or I've had really nice, you know, just DMs kind of pop through like, hey, you should really try this. It would probably work out. Like all that stuff. I appreciate that. I didn't realize that many people knew that I was a bass player. That makes sense. Like how many people just kind of came out of the woodwork and do like, dude, have you seen this? You need to do this type stuff. So I might, I might throw my hat in the ring. I think it's also kind of a perfect storm of since it's not like a full-time gig and you're not doing every tour, it could right. very well be a nice, hey, Tony has to, these next two tours overlap with Static X a little bit. So we need somebody for 2 weeks, or we need somebody for the first five dates of the tour. So it wouldn't necessarily be like, we're doing the Black Album 3.5 years on the road tour. Like, you know, one of those kind of tours.
I mean, would you be able to, if it was something like that and they were like, dude, you're the man, like, would you consider like, all right, cool. Like, you know, would that work with your current situation of,
I think mm-hmm. I would, I was talking to the wife, cause I was like, hey, can I be the bass player in Fear Factory? It's kind of a joke. She's like, yeah, if you want to,
without really thinking of the repercussions on her end. She's like, yeah, sure, no problem. Do what you
want. Do whatever you want. You know, yeah, all of my PTO and everything else would just be like Fear Factory tours.
Right.
Like, you know, no more trips to Universal Studios.
Yeah,
no more Disney. straight Fear Factory tours.
Yep.
But it would be fun. But I did kind of pose this question. If something like this popped up for you, Ro, like what would be a band that you would want to join?
God. That's a really tough question, dude. Mostly because I can't play an instrument, so I would have to be the singer. There's a band I could join. I'm trying to think of who. I mean, I just drove back from Vegas yesterday.
Okay.
From working a trade show, and I was so tired on the drive back. Like, I was so freaking tired. And it's funny because a lot of times people are like, oh, just splash water in your face or keep the window down or whatever. And none of that stuff works for me. And the only thing that works is me blasting metal and just singing it at the top of my fucking lungs. And I was having so much fun singing Warbringer. Nice. And it's just, those songs are so fucking good. That, and I've been listening to Power Trip and Fugitive. And it's like, just those three bands for me are just so, the speed of it, the aggression of it, the, like, it just makes me want to drive faster. So I would say one of those three bands. I wish I could do something like that, but it's like every singer that's in both of those bands is so perfect.
Right. It's
like, I'm like, I'll just be like a background dancer or something, you know, like that's what I'll be. I'll be the background singer. But, but yeah, I mean, that's always been my thing, is stuff like that. Or like those real, like what Bert sometimes says, like those crust punk bands, like your Raging Speedhorn or, you mm-hmm. know, like Buzz Oven or something like that. Or I Hate God, you know, just those kinds of bands where it's just kind of that kind of low growl, you know, shrieky kind of thing. So something like that. But yeah, I've been so into Fugitive and Power Trip. So I would say probably one of those bands.
I think if I were to play bass for anybody, I would probably maybe like I would love to be in Deftones. So that would be a fun band to play bass in. You know, if you want the crowds, I mean, Metallica, people shit on me for that one. You know, like the this guy's not as good as Jason. You know, this guy's not as good as Cliff. But yeah, give me like one of those bands. If everything equal, you know, put me in, you know, Machine Head, something like that. That would be a fun band to be in. I don't know, man. It's just playing some of those songs like that. Just, I feel like that would be a fun band to be in. But yeah, like so Metallica for the crowd and the massive. I mean, obviously, I love Metallica, so it's not like it's a far fetched idea. But right. Like Metallica for the crowds, Machine Head for the music, Deftones obviously for the music. Yeah, something like that. So I'll give those three bands.
I think you and Deftones would be like, I think that would be one of those bands that you would like sink into that, those songs so well, I mean, I just think of like, My Own Summer, just like that opening riff of my own summer and stuff like that. Like I can imagine just you just going back to you being 19, 20 years old, whatever, when you first heard Around the Fur and just like, just, you know, vibing so hard with it. So, and I think that's kind of the beauty of it too. When you see a band get a member that was such a huge fan before that, you know, that's why I love watching Tony in Fear Factory, because Fear Factory is like one of his favorite bands, you know? So it's cool to see somebody in their favorite band.
And for the purpose of this video, man, I would love to be in Fear Factory.
Yes.
or Burton Seabell's solo band. How about that too?
That's true too.
Let's dive into our interview with Burton Seabell. This is about an hour long. So
yeah,
we're going to shoot into the interview. And then for this part of the podcast, we will see you guys next week. But make sure we're going to play a little bit of Anti-Droid. Listen to our interview with Burton Seabell, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Yes, and make sure you check out burtonseabell.com. And you know what? As much as I'm digging this new Anti-Droid song, like, go back and listen to Ascension of the Watchers too. I was just revisiting that, and it's really fucking good. It's really, really good. So, but this is a great interview with Burton Bell. So enjoy, everybody.
I am a manifesting generator. Exposing my heartbeat onto the light, hypnotic casualty. I severed the machine that no longer served me. I would rather be damned than a slave to the factory. Flesh out fantasy, the way to my salvation. Never been destroyed by your own creation.
All right, guys, let's welcome Burton Seabell to New Pod here, NotFest.com. Burton, how are we doing today?
I'm well. Nice to see you guys. Thank you for having me, Toomey. And good to see you, Ro.
Good to see you too, dude.
Anti-Droid popped up, you know, a couple of days ago as we're recording. First off, man, absolutely loved hearing your voice again, like a nice warm blanket taking me back, you know, hearing that voice on a track. Talk to me a little bit about how that track came together.
Well, it started with the track Du Hast. Last year I did participated on the tribute record for Rammstein that Cleopatra released last year. And my friend Mark Thwaite invited me to do it. He had been given the track Du Hast to do, and he did it with Paul Ferguson, aka Big Paul Ferguson from Killing Joke. And when I got chosen to do Du Hast, Mark contacted me. He said, "Hey, here's the track. Check it out. And when you're ready, we'll record it at Stygian Sound, where my friend Alex Crescioni runs a studio." So when time came to do the track, I went to Stygian Sound and met Alex. Alex is a great, great guy, great producer, great engineer, great studio. Stygian Sound is a great studio. And because I was doing vocals for Du Hast. I was talking to Alex and just getting to know him and letting him know. He was asking me what my future plans were and essentially letting him know what was going on. And then he goes, and I told him I was looking for music from, collecting music from different producers, different songwriters. And after Du Hast was done, like a couple of weeks later, he sent me two or three tracks that he had written for me. And this is the one that stood out. And I just gravitated toward it instantly. And I worked on it for some time. He wrote the music. All I did was add one element of a beat to the whole song, which for me was cool. But if you didn't hear, you probably would never know. But so that's how that came about. When I was ready to, when I had the right idea and I had the lyrics down, I went in and I was just ready to go. I rehearsed by myself for every day in the studio for like a week, just for like 3 hours at a time, just going till it was ready. And then I went in and boom, recorded the vocals like in literally 4 hours. And he mixed it and it just came out great. And just when I finally heard it, I was like, holy fuck, this is a dope song. I want to make this my single. And he just ran with it. And he coordinated with Industrialism Films, Vicente, who Ro, right?
Yep.
They coordinated to help me do a video. And it's just all kind of like serendipitous of how it all just kind of came together. It's like really the universe came together to make this happen. And so that's how it came to be, really. Just very serendipitous.
I mean, tonally, it's very different than Ascension of the Watchers as well. You know, like it seems, absolutely. I wouldn't say night and day, but it's definitely different in that regard. Like you went a lot more aggressive on this one.
Well, that's the thing. You know, Ascension of the Watchers was an experiment of my sound, an experiment in my songwriting capabilities as a songwriter, as playing guitar, as putting lyrics to my own music. So it was an experimentation of sound and textures. It was an experimentation and where I really wanted to go. And the progression of each Watchers album gets progressively more heavier. However, it came to a time where I was like, you know what, I'm ready. You know, I think I've taken this as far as I can for the moment. Let me try doing something that, you know, I really love. I love industrial music. I love post-punk music, post-rock, post-punk rock. Post-punk rock sound. And just the heavy industrial beats. And that's what I love. And I adopted this mantra that I came up with for myself called heavy, groovy, dark, and moody. And for me, it just, Alex nailed it. It's like, yep, that's heavy, that's groovy, that's dark, and it's moody.
Right.
And that's what's going to be essentially every song I'm going to put out. It's going to be, every song is going to have elements of everything of that. So, so it is different. It's to me, it combines everything I've ever done. Fear Factory, GZR, Ascension of the Watchers, City of Fire, Ministry. Right. It just combines everything. And that's what I wanted to do, was take all these separate pieces that I've been part of and really make an amalgamation of it. Make a basically Frankenstein everything together and see what happens.
Right on.
So I have to talk to you about a couple of lines in the song. I feel like this is pretty on the nose, but rather be dead than a slave to the factory. Any innuendo in that there, or is that just on the nose?
Well, as I said before, it's not factory with a capital F. Mm. It's a factory of something that was created and something that I felt I got pigeonholed into. And that was not working for me. I grew tired of it. I was like, you know, this is not working for me anymore. I gotta move on. I gotta expand my creativity. And that's essentially what that's all about.
Do you have an entire album's worth of material right now? Like, is a record ready to come out?
No, I'm working on individual singles at a time. I do have a record's worth of music, but I'm adopting the hip hop strategy, where instead of coming up releasing a single and then the whole album comes out a couple weeks later, and then a couple weeks later, when that album's out, just the momentum of the single and the whole record just kind of slows and becomes sluggish and just almost crashes. So what I learned watching hip hop artists and other artists as well, but they would just release a single at a time, keep that momentum, keep that spotlight on them, and just release a single, every few weeks and just keep that momentum going.
One of my favorite bands a couple of years ago, they would put out a single and then a few weeks later, the second single. So I would go back and listen to the first single, second single, listen to those two songs. Then they add the third song to it. And so when you go back to hear the new song, then you go back and listen to tracks one and two. And it kind of did that until the album came out. It was probably over 9 months to a year at the album finally came out. And then one of my favorite songs on the entire album wasn't released until the very end. So, I mean, it was this slow build, but every time they put out something else, you were reminded of the other two tracks, other three tracks, other four tracks. I think that's a good way to look at it and good way to kind of do it. Because if you just threw out 10 tracks yesterday, tomorrow they're forgotten.
Right. Or like by the time you get to track seven, you're just kind of like, oh yeah, but like whatever.
Exactly. In this day and age, it's like the short attention span of masses, it was very apparent. And I just, there's this old saying in economics, less is more, supply and demand, less is more. So if you just feed them just a little bit at a time, they want to hear more. And that's where the interest stays. That's where the interest, they're compelled to keep listening. And they're, he's got something else coming up. Oh, he's got something else coming up. My next song is, it's heavy, it's groovy, it's dark and mid, it's more up tempo. It's evidently got more guitar in it. And it's gonna be awesome. I got a couple of guest artists on this next track that it's gonna be sick. I recruited Paul Ferguson again. Well, I recruited Paul Ferguson, and I've also recruited Norman Westberg, guitar player from Swans.
Oh, nice. Oh wow! So that's going way back.
Yeah, and Swans was one of my favorite bands of all time, and it's a band that influenced not just me, but Neurosis.
Yeah.
Influenced a lot of bands. Godflesh.
Yeah. A lot of that old, like you were saying, that old industrial, like noise, crust punk kind of vibe from way back then. Exactly. Yeah, from the early 90s.
I love that. Still do.
The second line in the song I want to talk about as being a blue-eyed male. My blue eyes are reflections of God. I think I will now steal that, and that will be my mantra for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's I don't know where that came from, man. That was in one of those times of creative just listlessness where you're just thinking, and all of a sudden, words or ideas or just images just pop into your head. And like, holy fuck. Where did that come from? I don't know. I'm fucking write it down.
That's one of those just like you write it down and you say it and it's just like puff up your chest. You're like, yeah, I just said that.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you noticed that one. That was probably one of my favorite lines of my career. So it's like it's very simple, but it says a lot.
Have labels approached you? Or you haven't signed to anybody yet, right?
I am not signed, but my I'm represented by Unchained HQ, Jason,
very cool.
And Vaughn. And this is actually, this track, Antidroid, is actually under their umbrella.
Very cool.
Through the Orchard. Yep. So, as long as they were willing to take me on, and I'm absolutely grateful that they took a chance on me. And I'm going to make it worth their while.
For sure. It's a great team to have behind you, especially,
absolutely.
I mean, They're one of like the three major powerhouse management companies out there. So, you know, definitely a good solid team there for sure.
Absolutely. And I've known Vaughn for, you know, since he started, ever since Killswitch Engage came onto the scene. I've known Vaughn since then. And I've met Jason through Vaughn when I would travel through Chicago, and we always wanted to work together. Just never came to one of those things that never came to fruition. I just finally had the right idea.
Yeah. And it's, I've known Jason for years too. I mean, I remember when he was like interning at Epic Records and working at McGaffey and all that kind of stuff, you know? So it's like to see those guys like kind of build up to what they've built up. It's like, yeah, like I said, it's a super powerhouse team over there, and a bunch of good dudes to boot, you know? So far,
they've been very cool. Everyone's been nice and just beautiful people.
Very cool.
And yeah, it's nice to have a support system as great as these people. And it's something else that I felt was lacking in my career.
Is this something you're going to want to tour or play shows or get a band together, kind of do a career retrospective kind of set? What are you thinking?
Yes to all of those questions. I'm in the process of booking a show. It's going to be a showcase. It's going to be in LA. I have a band together. They're already working on to retrospection. So I plan to play 4 new songs.
Cool.
Some deep cut Fear Factories, some Watchers, some GZR, some City of Fire. So wow. I'm just going to do like I said, you know, my new music is an amalgamation of everything I've ever done. And I'm going to push it all to basically put it all together into this package and just like see what happens. And the live show, it's going to be heavy. It's going to be groovy. And I want to create a vibe. I really do.
And just all under your name, like it's not going to have a band name. It'll just be.
It'll be Burton C. Bell. Maybe Burton C. Bell and the Droids. I don't know.
Well, you're already against the Droids, so.
Burton C. Bell and the Droids. I actually like that. That kind of works really well.
For now, it'll just be Burton C. Bell, but we'll see what happens.
Right.
I was joking with Jason about that about a month back, and he's like, "Don't forget that thought."
Yeah, let's keep that one tucked away, you know, for later use.
For later use, we'll see what happens.
Nice.
Well, yeah. As soon as I have this show booked, I will inform you.
Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely be there. That's for sure.
And I got I've got a shirt design that I'm going to have you, War Machine.
Hell yeah.
I'm going to have you produce it when I'm ready to go. I'm just getting the pre-sales in so I can get that, you know, early production money in so I can produce it. And just give me a t-shirt and that enamel pin. But yeah. I think it'll be cool.
Yeah, right when you are. Absolutely.
We'll be in LA to pick it up so you won't have to ship it.
Oh, that's a plus. That's definitely a plus.
I love when I record with Ro and he's having a day. He's like, somebody needs shirts yesterday and they want them shipped to Toronto and they need to be there in 15 minutes. And
yeah,
my God.
I'm dealing with that right now, just so you know.
Shipping just sucks right now. Ever since the pandemic, shipping and mailing anything has just suffered.
Yeah. It is. It really is. That's why I like doing stuff in LA so I can just be like, I'm just going to go pick it up. I'll pick it up and drop it off to you. And now nobody has to worry about anything.
Right? Yeah, that's my plan. Just pick it up.
Yeah.
Cut that whole cost out and, you know, shipping it. You might not even get it.
That's exactly it. I mean, especially when it comes to like conventions and stuff, it's like, then it just gets lost in the ether and nobody knows anything. And you're just like, great. All right. Bye. So,
exactly.
Yeah, so that's why I like to do stuff like that locally. It makes life a lot easier. But yeah, we're definitely ready to do that when you are. I can't wait to see what the art looks like. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's very simple. It's just, I'm working on new artwork as well for other stuff. But
nice.
Right now it's just one t-shirt. It's my logo on the front and on the back, heavy, groovy, dark, and moody.
Yeah.
And Moody's in the color dark blue, so it's Moody Blue.
Moody Blue.
Which is, you know, a reference to Elvis. Thus, the enamel pin is also, I stole that design from TCB, which is what Elvis used.
That'll be cool. I was just watching the other day, I was watching some of the Ascension videos and stuff, and it's obviously kind of got that very stop action animation kind of vibe to it. Is the art theme for your new stuff, is it similar at all to that, or is it, like I said, just totally different kind of direction?
Well, I'm going to keep it creative. Like Watchers, I'm going to keep it creative and artistic. And I'm just going to, for me, I'm just going to work with artists that I can, but artists that I respect and that are creative. And if I can do more of that kind of animated work, or one of them you're talking about, there's a couple you're talking about, the Watchers Residual Presence. It was done by a filmmaker named Hugo Borges. He's from Sao Paulo. And he worked on that. What he did is he resourced material from a film that he never used.
Oh, cool.
And so he used it for that. This guy, Victor, he's become a huge animator filmmaker since then. And he also did Ghost Heart.
Nice.
So it's both are very similar, but have a different story. And now he's working for Discovery Channel and some major players. And I was very fortunate that he got him on board to work with me.
Very cool.
Well, I'll find some more. I source out artists. That's what I do. I find artists that I like, that I have affinity to their talents, and I contact them directly myself.
Oh, nice.
And that's where the friendship begins.
Nice.
All right, Bert. Well, let's dive into a little new metal, a little new pod action here. Thinking about it, I mean, there are so many moments kind of in your career that are kind of attributed to the name new metal, obviously kind of a term off of New Breed, and they kind of took all of that and kind of made the term new metal out of a Fear Factory song. And then obviously those early days with like working with Ross Robinson kind of before he became the new metal producer, and even, maybe the blind riff is on Soul of a New Machine. You never know, like all that stuff.
So legend has it.
So let's dive into a couple of things. We'll talk about early Ross Robinson and kind of, did you kind of see him becoming what he became, or was he just a buddy that could record?
What happened to Ross just came out of left field. I didn't see that coming at all. And I didn't even know Ross. That was Dino's connection. Dino brought him in, and first time I met Ross was, he's like coming over, hey, I want to record an album for you. And that's when I met him. I never had an idea that he would go that far. But when I first met Ross, he had a company called Emerald Triangle Productions, and he was trying to start his own production company, obviously. And he had some kind of shadowy person in the back room, paying for everything, supporting the whole project. But we recorded at Fort Apache Studios in Santa Monica, which belonged to Blackie Lawless. And we recorded that in like a weekend.
Oh, wow.
It was supposed to be first album on his production. And, one thing, we get a contract, one thing leads to another. We decide not to sign the contract, but he owns the master, so he keeps the master. We keep the DAT tape, and DAT tape got pushed. Our manager at the time sent the DAT to Monty, and one thing led to another, and we were on Roadrunner. But I never saw Ross going. Never expected that. I'm very proud that he's very happy for him that he has so much success. He did a lot. He was doing that music like Fear Factory, and he did Korn, and he did Soulfly. But even during those bands, the term new metal didn't even come around.
Right.
Until like what, in 2000?
Yeah, I think it was probably like 2001.
2000. So there'd already been a lot of records that come out before that term came out. And when Fear Factory got lobbed into the new metal, I was like, huh?
Like, why us? What do we do?
I mean, didn't expect it. And honestly, I wasn't not a big fan of nu metal myself, but I mean, there are good bands in the whole scene, but there's a lot of bands that, you know, there's a lot of, just like any scene, there's a lot of bands that just kind of ruin everything.
Right. I mean, I think once the scene became kind of glutted, then it becomes like, okay, now it's become a parody of itself in a weird way, you know, almost like grunge, you know. Oh, yeah. You start seeing grunge fashion at JCPenney and stuff like that, and you're like, okay, this has gone way beyond the point. And
my teenage kids, well, a couple of them are into the grunge scene. And I was like, just go to a thrift store and buy some old shit.
Right. Right. You can tear up your own pants. Trust me. You don't need to treat your own pants.
Yeah, just tear them up or just wear them. Never wash them. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of the thing. It's like, just, you know, it's like on the one hand, you don't really consider Fear Factory as like the atypical nu metal band in the same way you would look at somebody like, I don't know, whatever, Flaw or Union Underground or whatever. But it's like you guys sort of set this kind of weird precedent.
You know? Totally Union Underground and Kitty.
Yeah.
Same tour. Snowcore 2000.
God damn, that was a long time ago. God, Snowcore 2000.
It was a long time ago. It was almost 20 years ago in April.
Yeah, damn near 20. Yeah, I mean, next year will be 25 years of all of that.
But, you know, nu metal has some great sounds. It offered a lot of cool tunes. And there were some, like I said, there were some cool bands. Obviously, Cool Chamber. They were around before the nu metal label, but you know they're still around and they made a comeback and doing fantastic.
Right. Well, it's like, I mean, I know you can't see it, but like I'm wearing like a Biohazard shirt. You know, it's like you would never really be like, oh, Biohazard, Fear Factory, nu metal. But it's like, in a way, you guys like ushered in such a different kind of vibe, you know, to pop culture.
Well, because I'm glad you said that, because Biohazard was, other than Anthrax, I think Biohazard was influenced by Anthrax when Anthrax did I'm the Man.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You could say that Anthrax pioneered nu metal by using together thrash and hip hop.
Right.
And that inspired Biohazard to work with other artists. Like, who are they working with? Oh my God.
I mean, they were touring with House of Pain. You know?
They were like connected with Onyx in a way.
Yep.
Maybe it was that soundtrack they were a part of. But I remember when we did that tour with Biohazard in 1993. And it was Fear Factory, Sick of It All and Biohazard. Oof. And Biohazard was already, at that point, experimenting with hip-hop beats in their mm-hmm. music.
Right. I remember I saw them tour with Onyx a few times too. And it's like, and that was always the weird thing where you'd be like, you know, just that kind of crossover was very, not so much unheard of, but just like, very, like people would just be like, wait, what? Like same thing, Anthrax, yeah. Public Enemy and Primus, you know, like one, that was never a tour that anybody would think to themselves like, oh no, that tour makes absolute sense. You know, would have broke down the wall.
Saying that tour with Public Enemy, that would have been sick.
Right. That was unfortunately a little bit before my time, slightly before my time with them. But I mean, but that was, again, it's like when you'd have, you know, Korn, Biohazard and House of Pain, you know, it's like, or, you know, House of Pain. You know, so it's like when you had those kinds of crossover tours, it just introduced everybody to everything. And it just, blew up there.
And that's, I guess that's how nu metal was born, really. Did we just trace it all the way back to Anthrax?
Anthrax, yeah. Or the, you know, Aerosmith, Run DMC, you know, kind of put it all together.
Yeah, for me, I've never been a fan of Aerosmith. But the coolest, to me, that was the coolest thing they did was the Run DMC track.
Right. Well, I mean, that's kind of it, I think, because like when you listen to stuff like Obsolete and whatnot, you know, you can hear the DJ scratching and stuff like that in the background. And I mean, I think that gave a lot of people that sort of like green light to be like, oh, so this is okay. You know, so I think
And a guy, the DJ from Swollen Members, did that scratching on it.
Who did it? I'm sorry?
The DJ from the Canadian hip-hop group Swollen Members.
Yeah.
The one who did the scratching on it. And he used the Van Halen 1 record to do it.
Oh, no shit. So it's like you kind of bring in that classic metal, you bring in this new kind of thing. I mean, that's ultimately it. It's like, you know, these combinations are going to become, you know, a chemical reaction sort of that just kind of creates this brand new element, you know, and I think that's really what you guys did.
You know, experimentation is what's all about. If you don't experiment, if you don't have the nerve to experiment and do something new, to try something different, you will never come up with something that's completely out of this world or out of left field. I was like, where the fuck did that come from? I was like, well, right. I was doing this. I brought this beat together and I put this guitar riff over it and it all worked.
Right. I mean, well, you even think about like the whole Neurosis Swans angle. I mean, it's like to take what they did and then create what you've created based on a kind of like noise industrial, you know, crust punk kind of thing, and then create something like Fear Factory, which, you know, in my opinion was, I always used to think of it more like chrome cyber metal, you know, where it's just like, all right, but you're taking it from like Neurosis, which is like the chunkiest, grittiest, grossest thing ever, and creating something that's chrome out of it. You know, like I found that to be so, so fascinating.
And that's, you know, that you have to take something and make it your own.
Right.
If you don't make it your own, you're not going to be noticed. If you're going to sound just like Neurosis, people are going to say, oh, they sound like Neurosis.
Yeah.
A friend of mine a while back kept introducing me to bands that sounded like, oh, you'll like this band. They sound like Neurosis. I'm like, why don't I just listen to Neurosis then?
Right on. Yeah, exactly. Why not just listen to them? Right. Yeah, you love these guys. They sound exactly like Deftones. You're like, all right, well, I have Deftones. Thanks.
Great band. But if you sound just like them, you know, you're not really adding anything to it. Yeah, you might have a couple of good tracks, but it sounds like a Deftones track.
Right, right. You're not like treading any new ground, you know?
So you're not breaking any new ground. You're
breaking any new ground.
And pushing it is what is necessary in the evolution of music.
Right. And I think that's why when I first heard Fear Factory, I heard you guys on SOU, and I heard Martyr. And I just remember I was like, this is so different than everything I'm listening to right now. And it just blew my fucking mind.
That's funny. Yeah. We thought the one thing that made that song different was the tambourine on the hi-hat. That's the one thing.
Everything else. Yeah, a buddy of mine gave me Demanufacture, and like I was completely blown away. And I was like, well, this is going to be one of my new favorite bands of all time.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for that. What do they say? Necessity is the mother of invention.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the tools necessary to make something, you come up with the tools.
Right, you create it.
And we did what we could.
Yeah, I mean, even being out of LA, I mean, you know, in that time, it's like it was so easy for there to be so many clones of whatever was out there. And it seemed like you guys back then were just, everything you guys were doing was just breaking new ground with something else. I mean, when you guys were playing in LA back in the day, I mean, were you guys sort of the only, for lack of a better term, like cyber metal band out there, or was there kind of like a little groundswell of that sort of thing? And then
we weren't cyber metal when we were playing the LA scene. We were playing the backyard gig, death metal parties, but you know, someone's backyard or downtown warehouse somewhere. We were very much like in a very primordial form at that point. We hadn't really decided what direction to go. We had death metal songs. We had some industrial songs.
Right.
And as we were writing, we'd start experimenting more. I remember, like for instance, we wrote Scapegoat after we saw Helmet. No Name. I'm like, I think it was a Strap On record we saw. I was like, fuck, this brutal. And it was right. But it was Helmet that had that fucking groove that you just cannot deny. Like that Strap It On record is just sick. That week after seeing Helmet, we wrote Scapegoat.
Like, we got to do something with this right now.
You know, we were talking earlier before we started recording about, you know, touring with some of those early Ozfests with like Slipknot and whatnot. What was your kind of first take on Slipknot when you started seeing them kind of coming out of nowhere?
Oh my God. When they first were touring together, it was such a mess. Not in a bad way. It was such the beginning stage for them, and they were trying to figure it out.
Right.
And they, on that Ozfest, we were doing off shows, and Slipknot was supposed to be on the off shows with us, and they did one off show, and then they stopped doing it after that. We just didn't have the stage room.
Right.
Oh yeah. Right.
But I thought it was pretty fantastic. They had a great look. Kids were into it. They had a great energy, which is probably the best part of it. That's their energy made the music. I mean, they're dressing up in outfits and whatever. That was one thing. But the energy just was unbeatable. And watching them and all the other bands, there's so many other bands that touring with the Ozfest was so killer, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, big bands you tour with, the smaller bands you tour with, it was just a big family. Right. And after everyone was done and a lot of people just kind of congregate out in the audience watching Ozzy.
Right. Well, it's like, and it's like pre-internet. There's no phones. There's no, you know, there's other distractions. All you can do is watch other bands all day long.
Yeah. You know, either go to a payphone and put in a bunch of quarters to talk to your girlfriend.
Right. Or find your calling card.
Or you have some device that makes the sound of a quarter being inserted. Radio Shack used to sell those.
Oh, that's funny. Man, I wish I'd known about that. Fuck, dude. that would have made touring on Ozfest 2000 a lot easier. That's for fucking sure.
Yeah, but so before all that, you would go and you'd watch bands. And I would go out and watch bands or hang out backstage and just talk and shoot the shit and have a couple beers, you know?
Right.
Smoke a bunch of weed.
Did you ever host any barbecues, anything like that, or is it just a straight hang?
We had a couple barbecues. Those were the kind of things that just got completely random. Someone would get a wild hair up their ass in one band and just like, oh, we're having a barbecue today.
Right. Suddenly there's a bunch of meat somewhere and you're like, oh, I guess we're doing this thing.
Exactly. Right. You have a barbecue and all, you know, all the bands would mingle. Not all the bands, but a lot of bands would mingle and have a good time. What Neurosis started doing on that tour was the drum circles after every show. And that was actually really fucking cool.
Yeah. Wow, drum circle. I haven't thought about that in a long time.
Yeah, that's very 90s.
Yes, very much.
That's like, yeah. That's like right after Hacky Sacks.
Right.
Those drum circles.
I mean, I remember when I was out with Soulfly on Ozfest in 2000, that was how they ended their show too. It was just this big tribal drum circle thing. It is a very 90s, early 2000s kind of thing.
Soulfly got it from Neurosis.
Yeah, no, for sure. That is definitely.
I don't mean that in a negative way, you know.
Right.
It's great, you know, it's meant to be shared it's meant to be promoted as a sharing of vibrations and it's a collective of consciousness where you get together and it just feel positive.
Right. And it was all the drummers from all the bands, you know, so it was it very much was a big community kind of vibe to it for sure.
Absolutely. That's what it is. A great, great way to put it. A community vibe.
Yeah.
And that's what the Ozfest was. It's a great community and it was a lot of fun.
Do you think it's wild to kind of look back? I don't know how nostalgic you are, but is it kind of wild to when you see certain bands like a System of a Down or Linkin Park, or just all those bands, how they're revered now, and like System of a Down will kind of pop up and just play a stadium out of nowhere, and you know, even a Korn is still big, and System or a Slipknot, you know, they have a whole economy based on Slipknot now. I mean, it's wild to think of all those bands that kind of came up with you guys or even after you guys that are now, you know, just the mainstays of rock.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, first of all, they worked hard to get there, and they deserve every bit of that they've earned it. They've earned it. They've worked hard. They've earned it. And I'm very happy that they've made it. And I am proud. I don't know if proud is the right word, but happy to be part of that journey.
And, right.
You know, and it's and whatever, wherever they are now, I know when I run into them, it's just like, hey, how's it going? It's like, there's no bad vibes. And for me, I had no bad vibes about it. Nostalgia is like, it's like, wow, I was a part of that. You know, I was part of their journey to get to where they are now.
Right. I mean, I think that's kind of it. Fear Factory is so integral in that journey for all of them, you know, I mean, you know, whether it's System or Korn or whatever, I mean, you know, they also grew up like seeing you guys playing these small places and, you know, going, we gotta do something, like we gotta try to do something else or do something bigger or take this and make it into something for us. I mean, yeah, you guys are very much a pretty important building block in all of these bands, you know, careers.
Thank you for saying that. And while you were saying that, and you mentioned Korn, and it reminded me of Ross Robinson again. Here we go back, like Abraham Simpson, going back to another topic. you know, Ross doing the Fear Factory demo, that's what we'll call it. He was practicing. That was like a trial run for what he really was intending to do.
Right.
And Korn gave him freedom to make that happen. And it's that freedom and their assurance of what their sound wanted to be is what propelled them to being mega stars.
Right. And without you guys being that first Ross Robinson band, without you guys there, like so much wouldn't have happened, you know? Absolutely. So I think that's when, you know, you can look at bands like Biohazard and Anthrax as being these sort of godfathers of new metal, but it's like really without Fear Factory, without you guys and that initial Ross thing, like so much of that spider web of everything that happened would have just fallen apart. Like none of it would have been solid. So I think that's
thank you for really saying cool. That's very generous of you to say that. You know, for me, when you would say something like that, I would usually say that there's a lot of bands that Fear Factory was inspired by that, you know, never really had that kind of recognition either. But, you know, if it weren't for these bands, there would be no Fear Factory.
Right.
So it's just, you know, it's like you said, it's a spider web. Everything's connected. It's just everything has a point of origin where it's all connected, if you know what I mean.
Right. And I think that's kind of it, the interconnectivity of it all. I think that's why doing this new podcast is like, it's kind of cool because we get to look at it from this, you know, kind of this forest for the trees kind of thing. And then this big picture thing where you see all of the kind of interwoven parts of it so that it's never just like Korn created the scene, Deftones created it. It's like, no, it was really this, it's like Legos. You know, it's like you need all of these little blocks on the inside to build everything. You can't just build the structure.
For people like you and me that really love music, and we just don't listen to it, we study it.
Right.
You know, I'll pick, you know, back in the day when you pick an album out, you read it. I mean, not just listen to it, I just read along. As the singer was going through the vocals, I'd read the lyrics and then I'd read who did the artwork and who produced it, who engineered it, where was it recorded?
Right.
And to me, that's all interesting. And you would learn about these bands from hearing from other bands, listening to other bands. And it's just one thing inspires another. And it's like the domino effect. It's like, it just keeps going.
Well, I mean, when I used to read the liner notes, it was always like, I always loved reading all the bands that the bands would thank. And then that's who I'd go and look at and be like, oh, okay. Like they're thanking Sepultura. I've never heard of this band Sepultura. Who's that? You know, or I'd see like whatever t-shirts you guys were wearing. I'd be like, oh man, I need to find out who that band is. You know, like
that's how a lot of people back in the day before the internet would learn about other bands. Is when someone in their favorite band was wearing a shirt. It's like, what the fuck's that band?
Right.
I got to check that out.
Right. Especially being in New Jersey, pre-internet, all that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, if it wasn't in Rip Magazine or it wasn't in, you know, Metal Edge or Metal Maniacs, you know, I don't know. I don't know what local bands you guys are playing with down in Virginia. You know, like, it's like, we didn't have that. We didn't know who that was. But it's like, when you'd see it, like, oh, okay, Fear Factory's thinking so-and-so. Oh, cool. All right. Let me go find out. Yeah,
gotta love a fanzine.
I must have done 1,000 fanzine interviews.
Oh yeah, because I set up most of those. that was literally my job at Roadrunner back then. Was you do? I took care of fanzines and like the local like weeklies, you know, like that kind of thing. Plus, I had my own zine, you know, which ironically enough was called Shock to the System.
I remember that one.
Yep.
So yeah. You owe Burton a few bucks for that title there, bud.
Actually, it's kind of the other way around. Mine came out before obsolete.
Just pre-obsolete?
Yeah, that was totally pre-obsolete.
All right, I'll give you credit for it.
There you go. That's what I remember when I first started. I was like, wait, what? Like, I love it. But it's actually funny. This is the 30th anniversary of my zine this year. So,
are you gonna do a throwback issue?
Well, no, I actually want to. I want to try to. I only put out 9 issues, but I want to put them all in a nice hardcover and just put out like all the photos that we never got to use and all that kind of stuff because I have a zillion of photos and yeah. So I want to try to do that. So
that's a really cool idea.
That's a knock on wood. I hope I can make that happen this year, kind of thing. You know, just make like 100 of them, sell them to friends. If it does cool, if it does well, then great. If it doesn't, then it's only 100. You know.
Somewhere. It's still, you know, there, I'm sure there's, I would love to see it, but I think it's a great idea, bro. It'll
be fun. You know, I mean, without that zine, I wouldn't have gotten into the music industry. I wouldn't have really known about Roadrunner because back then it was just kind of like, okay, cool. We're going to go and see Pantera. We're going to, you know, but then once I started the zine and like all, like the whole thing just opened up to me. I'm like, what is a record company? What is a, you know, like, and that's how I got into all of it. So it's like without that and, you know, then I got introduced to first Machine Head and then you guys and then Sepultura. It's like it just was, like I said, just like with you guys in the new metal scene, you guys were part of my entire building block experience of where I am in life now and where I'm still doing, you know, what I'm still doing now. So it's like I said, like without you guys, there really is so much that would not have happened.
Wow, thank you very much for saying that. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, not too far off for me too.
I never think about that kind of stuff either. It's
that, you know, butterfly effect. I'm
very proud of it, but I try not to dwell on the past for myself, and I just move forward. And once I listen to a record, I'm done. See ya. I'm ready for the next one.
Right. I think for me, when it comes to just getting older, it's like you really start to, because again, when you're in the midst of it, you're not really thinking, like when you're in the midst of a cool record music scene, you're never really thinking like, I'm part of this cool music scene. But it's like, after 10, 15, 20 years, when you look back at it and you're just like, oh wow, like we fucking really built something there, didn't we? You know, it's like kind of just looking back on it now and just being, you know, kind of being able to look at it in a sitting on the porch drinking lemonade kind of thing, you know, like, yeah, those are good times, you know.
I spent more than half my life in the music industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, it's like where we are now.
That's where I am now. And then could I do something else? Sure. Do I want to? Not really.
Right. You're right. Nothing else seems quite as fun, you know, or fulfilling.
We all do what we have to do to get by, but you know, I'm going to keep being an artist and musician as long as I can.
Right.
Like Willie Nelson, he's going to be 91 this year.
Yeah.
Insane. And still fucking doing it.
You know, it's wild. Like looking back on even the main people I know in the music industry and in different ways, like how many people I met in the 90s. Like I met a young Jose Mangan on the Fear Factory bus in Memphis, Tennessee. Like there's like, you know, this wiry kid on the bus and he ended up being Jose Mangan, you know.
You must have met him the same day.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember him being in Memphis and he just became like some kind of just a great personality.
Yeah.
He was a big fan, and you know, invite him up on stage for Edge Crush. I was like, fuck it, why not? He was the first person to do that.
Nice.
I mean, that's, again, like that's why I look back on it and it's like you realize just how integral, I mean, between you guys and Machine Head and Sepultura, like just all of the things that really, like this, it really was a very perfect storm, you know, this very lightning in a bottle kind of situation. And
it's a good time for the music industry. It really was.
Right.
You'd say that was the last golden age of the music industry.
You know, I agree with that too, but it's like at the same time, like with this kind of new renaissance of new metal now, you're starting to see like these kids who not only grew up like listening to like Korn's first records and stuff like that, but it's like now they're rediscovering that Fear Factory thing and sort of now reintegrating it in a new way in their new metal, you know? So it's, I don't know. I love this kind of resurgence and recycling of it all, you know?
Well, it's very true. Exactly what you just said. A friend of mine who I've known since the 90s has a daughter now who's 18, and her daughter is a bass player of a new metal band in San Francisco.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And, you know, Korn is one of our favorite bands, Deftones, Fear Factory. You know, we're in their pool of creative inspiration. And I was like, wow, really? It's like, it makes sense. You know, everything has a cycle.
Right.
And, you know, a 20-year cycle, like grunge is coming back. It's been about 20 years since grunge kind of left the scene.
Right.
Same, you know, new metal is now making that comeback. It's coming up on 20 years. It is a 20-year cycle, not just for music, but for like fashion.
Right.
Music and fashion really kind of go hand in hand in a lot of ways, but it's a 20-year cycle.
No, that's a really good point. It's so bizarre to see people walking around with Tower Records shirts. I'm like, what the fuck?
Dude, I worked on Tower Records.
Right, that's exactly it. It's like when you really think about it, it's just like, really?
I worked on Tower Records in Washington, D.C., and then I worked at Tower Video in L.A. on the Sunset Strip.
Oh, on Sunset, yeah.
I worked at Tower Records in Nashville in the cassette department. So
I worked in the cassette department, too. I hated cassettes.
Can I just tell you? So I'm working with RPM, this Raining Phoenix Music with Sebastian Bach and Kerry King and all that. And cassettes are such a huge part of our business now. And it's such a cool, weird throwback. But at the same time, I absolutely love like the fact that like I'm getting a cassette sent to my house. I'm like, this is so fucking weird.
Let me rephrase what I said. Working in the cassette department sucked.
Yes,
right. But I still have a dual cassette player.
Right,
and me too. I still have a collection of cassettes that I've been going through. I got my stereo finally set up. I'm going through old cassettes. I'm going through mixtapes I had made. I'm like, holy fuck. Right. This is dope.
Yeah.
It's like a dual cassette tape where you play it and it'll just automatically play the other side. So you don't have to get up and switch it.
Nice. Yeah. Auto reverse. Auto reverse is the greatest thing ever. I used to ride my bicycle everywhere. So you can't like just be like, oh, stop and switch the it's like auto reverse was the greatest piece of technology I own.
You'd be listening to your cassette on your Walkman.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The Walkman batteries that only last for like an hour.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have to have a backpack full of cassettes and batteries.
That was and battery. Oh, man.
You know?
Well, Burton, as we kind of wrap up, I do want to ask you, last time you and I chatted in an interview, you were promoting your art gallery thing. How did that go?
That went very well. It was very successful. For me, I felt it was very successful. I had a great turnout attendance for the opening. It was put on by my friend, Vincent. He was doing the tattoo shop, mm-hmm. Vincent Castilla.
Yeah.
And, he had a shop briefly in Fort Lauderdale, his tattoo shop. And it also had his personal gallery, and he only did two openings. The first opening was a retrospection in honor for H.R. Giger, who's he's an acolyte of H.R. Giger, so he was also friends. And then I was the second one. And I thought it was very successful. I got a lot of great positivity about it. Still have some prints for sale.
Nice.
That the originals that are on dye sublimation, which are printed on aluminum, which is fantastic. It's just the deepest colors and just worked out for this. So still have some originals available.
Where can people find that if they're interested in
on my website, burtoncbell.com.
Very cool.
Nice.
And the dye sublimations are one of a kind. I'm only going to do one. It's the only time I'm doing this dye sublimations of this. So if you're lucky enough to get one of these, you'll have the only one.
Yeah, seriously. That's the best feeling. That's the best feeling also.
The Pantera. I did that Pantera.
Oh, yeah. I just got that like 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah, man. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was a lot. That was a lot of fun to do, and working with John Pearson, the artwork was fantastic, and it was a great experience. I did another one for Z2. It's not out yet. I don't know if there's an NDA or something for it, but it's. I did a great story for it. It's a story not in my wheelhouse. It wasn't like a sci-fi dystopian kind of thing. It was more of like a fantasy, which was very fun to do. And that's not out yet. So I don't think I can talk about it.
Do you see yourself doing more comic book stuff? A for Z2 is one thing, you know, to do something for, you know, the Pantera book and all that. But like, I mean, do you see a comic book sort of tie in with the music that you're doing now?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
And that's the to-do list.
I have a bunch of story ideas written down. I still want to do the follow-up to the Industrialist. Mm. And I have it written. I just need to compile it and essentially kind of condense it, because it's just like pages and pages of kind of shit, really. But
right, just like
right in there, there's a lot of good stuff in there that I just need to condense. But yeah, I do see my writing in part of the next chapter of my life, where music intertwines with the stories that I create.
Right. So it gives you kind of more of a visual angle to the audio.
Absolutely. And even creating the artwork myself is something that I think I'm going to move towards. In the past, I did design these two or three different Fear Factory logos and that we sold on t-shirts. Mm-hmm. My artwork is, I don't know, I don't think I'm a great artist, but if I can get it together, I can come up with a great idea that someone else can pretty much come up with an idea, draw it out, and then they can produce it. It's like, oh, here's like, just make it better.
Right. Here, do something with this.
Do something with it. I got this idea. There you go.
Yeah, right.
It's not that erratic, but I come up with a concrete idea.
Nice. Do we know when the next single will be out? Is there a release date on that yet?
I'm looking late May, June.
Okay.
So very soon. It'll be here before we know it, at least.
Very soon, exactly. And I plan to have a showcase in June. So that's what we're working on. The date and the venue will be probably announced next week.
Oh, very cool.
Sweet. Nice.
Cool.
Yeah, I think so. I'm excited. I haven't performed a full set on stage since 2017.
Oh, wow. It's been a minute.
And I was on tour with Ministry in 2018, but I was just a guest.
Right.
Well, I haven't done a full set since 2017. So I'm really jazzed to start performing again. You know, when you've done it for so long, and it's something I enjoyed doing before I was in a band, being, you know, performing and just pushing my passion, pushing my art outward like that. It's something I really miss in my life.
Yeah. And I think people are going to be excited about it too, you know, just to hear something new, hear something different. I think that's something that people are always on the hunt for nowadays too. So.
Well, I hope so. I'm trusting my instincts to feel that whatever I like, I know other people are going to like it too. Obviously, it's not for everyone, but there's going to be a lot of people that dig it, and that's all that matters.
Right.
And first and foremost, I dig it, so that's the most important part.
Right. It's got to feel good to you first.
Absolutely. trusting your own instincts is very important.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, Burton. Cool. Well, we will let you go. We kept you a little longer than I thought we would. Yep. So, this has been a blast, man. This has been a blast. Yeah. Kind of going down memory lane.
I could keep talking for hours. You know, that's what old people do.
Yeah, no, let's just reminisce about the old days,
which was the style at the time.
Right. Yeah, you know, if you got pumped up for an hour, you can get off this and be like, you know what, I did some things, you know.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. My day is done. Let's go.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, Burton, once again, thanks for taking some time here. New pod on knotfest.com.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Grateful for this opportunity. Thank you for having me. Great to speaking to both of you. And hopefully we can do this again very soon.
Yeah. And I'll definitely be at that showcase. That is 100%.
We will definitely let you know, my friend. Sherry will be there too, which would be even better.
Excellent. It'll be good to see both of you guys.
Thanks for listening to New Pod. Follow Toomey at Talk Toomey Talk and Roe at War Machine Merch. Rate, review, and subscribe and tell your friends. Until next week, keep it new.